Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Ladies and gentlemen, day two of the KSFR Fun Drive, and you Radio Cafe listeners were wonderful yesterday, and we hope there's a whole new set of KSFR listeners, Radio Cafe listeners who are listening today, because during our pledge drive, it's very important that you help us out just as we try to do our best to serve you all the rest of the year. Please give a call right now to 428-1393, 428-1393, and make a pledge of support, no matter how large or how small, at KSFR. We're setting another goal this hour of $1,500. So whoever is the first to step up and make a call is the first to help us toward our goal. We have a $100,000 fund drive this time around. We've been doing these one-day fund drives, which have been great, but we have to go a couple of extra days this time because we have to hit a goal of $100,000 to just basically stay on the map, ladies and gentlemen. We have a program right now called Adopt a Watt, because we're trying to sell 2,500 watts so that we can increase our power. Those of you over on West Alameda and in certain parts of town where you don't have such great signal, we're trying to make our signal better so you can adopt a watt. And you can name that watt anything you want. We had people name their watts after their grandchildren, after their pets, all sorts of things. So 428-1393 is the number. Let's get the phones ringing like mad. And let's adopt a watt, and let's above all support KSFR, 428-1393. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the program Natalie Goldberg. She is the author of several books, including Writing Down the Bones, and I think most recently, An Old Friend from Far Away, The Practice of Writing Memoir. And she is going to be co-teaching a workshop called Fresh Ink, Walking the Path of the Writing Life, along with Wendy Johnson. And that is this coming weekend, starting September 19th, going through the 23rd, going into the week, at the Upaya Zen Center. And there will be a Dharma Talk, which is free to the public, on Wednesday, the 22nd of September at 5:30. Welcome, Natalie, to the Radio Cafe.
I'm so happy to be here, Mary Charlotte.
It's great to have you back.
Thank you.
Now, for you, how do you think about the relationship between meditation and writing?
I don't see any difference. I see them as completely parallel. And that when you're sitting, you have to sit with everything and not move. When you're moving your pen, you have to write with everything and let it come through you. So they're completely coincident for me.
It's so interesting because the person who doesn't practice writing in that way might think meditation is such a non-verbal activity, and writing is just the opposite.
Well, that's why they're terrific together, because sitting brings you to a large world, and it doesn't mean minus talking or minus thoughts. You know, it encompasses everything, and it can get stuck if we just think meditation is sitting. Then we can't bring it out into the world.
So what is meditation for you if not sitting and doing the, quote-unquote, doing the meditation practice?
It's being with you right now, being aware of really sitting here and being present with you, knowing that I have a cup of tea steaming, I'm holding it, I'm feeling the listeners out there. And you know what, Mary Charlotte, I had an idea.
Oh, good.
You know, as part of the pledge drive, while we're talking, why don't people who care about writing and who have been affected by my books call in with a pledge? Wouldn't that be a good idea?
That would be a very good idea indeed.
And
that's a lot of people have been affected by your
books.
Well, good.
We need to raise a lot of money.
Exactly.
And you've done such beautiful work, and KSFR has done beautiful work. And writers, we need to support this. And even if you can send just $5, it moves energy and helps the support of the whole thing.
428-1393. It was funny. We were talking yesterday about sustainable farming, and the guest I had on the air, the wonderful Tara Brockman, said money is like manure. It doesn't do anything till you start spreading it around. Oh. Now you're talking about money as energy. We should have a new money metaphor every day.
Yes, yes. Money just has to move. You hold on to it, it dies.
Right, it becomes stagnant.
Or it becomes nothing, as we saw with the economy.
Yeah, exactly.
We better spend it now while we have it.
And that's and above all, this idea of sharing. I mean, in meditation practices, in Buddhist practices, you have continually the idea of sharing what it is that you have, sharing your merits, sharing your abilities, not keeping it all to yourself.
Yes. Well, of course, because anything you keep to yourself gets dead. And you have to constantly, you know, again, I'm going to use it, move the energy, stay alive. I taught in New York, and I talked a lot about structure. Structure constantly has to be cracked open. If you stay in one structure and keep staying there, structure is wonderful, but if you don't keep cracking it open and making it alive, it becomes dead.
What's an example of that? Like, the structure of a sonnet. That's been there for, not millennia, but centuries.
Well, what's wonderful about that, centuries are reaching out to us. And it's not natural anymore to write sonnets. So when a sonnet reaches out to us from the past, we're meeting that past and trying to form our body and thoughts into some old way, and not old meaning bad. It's wonderful. But I'm going to give you another example, which is a much bigger leap. I just came back in June from a 5-day meditation retreat at Auschwitz.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And one of the things I realized was the Nazis had very strong, tight structures, and ultimately it was death. They were doing death camps, and there was no breath, and there was no breaking of structure. So it's almost the extreme example of a frozen structure.
Yeah, over rigidity.
Yes, and over time, until you become inhuman. That's the problem. You can become inhuman. That's why structures are wonderful, and you can't be frozen with one.
4281393, ladies and gentlemen, is the number. How on earth did a meditation retreat happen in this place of all places, where this horrible, horrible concentration camp had been there?
Yeah, Bernie Glassman, a wonderful Zen teacher, brings people there. He also brings people to Rwanda. He gives people retreats on the streets, where he takes everything away from you and then leaves you on the streets of New York to become homeless. And it's bearing witness, you know, who do you become after seeing the darkest of the dark? And it was very powerful. My psyche is still trying to make sense of it, because it was, you can't make any sense of it. Like, you can't make sense of death. What happened here? Are we human beings? What is it to be a human being?
What was it like in terms of the other people who were there at this retreat?
Well, there were actually 150 people, and they came from all countries. And they weren't just Buddhists. Christians came, a lot of Jews came, Israelis, Germans, Belgium, Americans. You know, we're all haunted by Hitler. Let's face it, nobody names their kid Adolf anymore, or would dare to. And I think we're haunted by, you know, whether you're a Jew or a German, the Auschwitz haunts all of us as something very extreme. And, you know, what I saw was, it was a death camp. There was nothing alive, and nothing alive in even the people who were administering it.
Were you actually doing the meditation retreat inside the camp?
Yes, in Birkenau. We sat at the place where the railroad would come in, and they'd choose whether they lived or died, you know, whether they went to the work camp or to the gas chambers. We sat there a lot. We sat in the barracks. We sat at the bombed-out crematoriums. And it was very powerful because many beings died there. Many, many millions of beings in one small area. So it's also, in a way, a holy, sacred place. And you can't put your finger on it. And you felt that people, we read names, thousands of names. People wanted to be recognized. It was almost as if the souls couldn't go on without being recognized, because they were made to think they weren't anybody. You know, they didn't exist and didn't matter. They weren't human.
Were people, the other people who were on this retreat with you, were they like, I don't know how to put it, freaking out?
Yeah, we were all in some way freaking out, but we were adults and we had practice, the physical practice of being still. We knew that. So it allowed us, we freaked out inside, but we didn't, take, iron bars and start screaming and hitting people or anything. So we had that outward good structure, which allowed us really to feel deeply. It was very hard. And I think a lot of us were in just shock. And it's been the weeks afterwards that has really impacted me. But funny, I want to take that leap from that to how I said my meditation right now is being with you. That's why meditation can't just be left on the cushion, because things like this are happening all the time.
Right.
And it's, imperative for us to bring what we know out into the world.
We're talking to Natalie Goldberg, the author of many books, teacher of, writing, meditation, writing as meditation, different
yes.
kinds of meditation. People, what are you going to be doing on this retreat?
Oh, that's a good question. It's fresh ink. I'm doing it with my best friend, Wendy Johnson, who wrote Gardening at the Dragon's Gate. And she's an activist and also very connected to nature. And we're going to do a lot of sitting, walking, writing. And we often do lots of spontaneous things. We took people to Bandelier when we read Scott Momaday's book. They have two books they're assigned to read. Actually, Jimmy Santiago Baca's memoir.
Who is speaking tonight at
yes,
the Lenses.
I'm going to it.
Me
I look
too.
Forward to it.
Yeah.
And then also Patricia Hampel, A Florist's Daughter, about living in the Midwest. And so we study the minds of the authors as our teachers. You want to learn to write? Look at writers. They're our teachers. So I'm looking forward to it. You know, we get to eat and hang out at Upaya.
Yeah. And it's funny. It's so obvious that in order to be a writer, you have to do a huge amount of reading and read voraciously. But I think sometimes people forget about that when they get so deeply into the method of journaling and writing whatever comes to mind.
That's why I've started assigning writing books before they come. Because people aren't reading. And I say to them, why should people read you if you're not reading anybody else? These are our teachers, and this is a lineage that you enter by your effort. It's a very democratic thing. You had a brilliant father. Your mother was literary. It doesn't matter. Your father won the Nobel Prize. You have to enter that lineage, elbow your way in with your effort.
We're talking to Natalie Goldberg, and let's just take a break right now. I think people are so busy listening to you that they're not getting up to make those phone calls. So let's just give them a moment here, a chance to make a phone call, 428-1393. If you like what Natalie Goldberg is saying, if you are perhaps a writer who has been influenced, and so many people have been influenced by your work, especially that first book, Writing Down the Bones, and the subsequent books as well. But if you are a writer, please, or anybody, please call 428-1393, 428-1393, and make a pledge to KSFR.
Yeah, writers show that we matter and that we have some power and muscle behind us.
We have a report from the control room.
Yes, indeed. And Susan Harris called in as a tribute to you, Natalie.
Yay.
And she also contributed in honor of Helen Bigelow, a published writer.
Oh.
And thank you again, Susan Harris. And then to a couple others have called in, Cynthia Botke, who adopted a Watt named Alchemy.
Nice.
And John Fogarty adopted Eris Watt.
Excellent. Thank you, John. Thank you, all of you. 4281393. We have a $1,500 goal for this hour. Mary Lynn will be updating me, and I will be updating all of you as to what numbers we are at. But it is very important that we get the fund drive over with as quickly as possible. It's a $100,000 fund drive, and every dollar counts, every watt counts, every phone call counts. 4281393. Natalie, how has your own writing practice evolved over the years? How did you start out?
I started out, I was very strict, and I had a strong structure, and I would write hours a day because I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust that I would keep doing it. But it was by showing up over time that I built a confidence in myself. Not a confidence that I'll write great stuff, but that I will do what I say I will do. I built a strong spine. And it also helped that I taught a lot. And so I kept repeating over and over the rules of writing practice, and they went deeper into me. But I never get tired of it. I've been teaching for 35 years. It's still exciting to me because I never memorized the rules. They come up as though they were fresh. Oh, yeah, don't cross out. You know, I remember them again.
What's don't cross out?
Don't cross out when you're writing. Keep your hand moving.
Oh, right.
Because crossing out is a little chance for the editor to come in.
So when is it right for the editor to come in?
Probably 2 hours. I want to say 2 years later. 2 weeks later, after the blood is kind of dried. When you first write, you don't know what you've written if you've really let go and lost control. But later on, you can really see where it's awake and where it isn't. And I don't, you know, I don't call it the editor because it's dangerous. Often the editors we have in our head tries to diminish us and cover us up and make us small. So I call it the samurai comes in and just cuts, you know, really with great courage, anything that isn't alive.
Well, and also adds, I mean, so many writers say that the art happens in the rewriting.
Yeah. I'm hoping that I can get as much out clearly with my whole life and heart and whatever's behind me, like trees and moon and Auschwitz, you know, get that through me so that I don't have to edit as much. So I hope that my first draft is strong.
So you basically are using the same process that you evolved that so many people have read in Writing Down the Bones. You're still using that today?
That's the only thing I know. I only studied 6 weeks with Allen Ginsberg at Naropa in 1976. That's the only class I ever took.
And is that what he taught you?
No, but I...
What did he teach you?
He taught me to polish the mind. You know, that he taught me that the mind and writing are connected. And the more you understand the mind and how it works through meditation, the more you can use that equipment, your tool. What's the writer's tool? Pen, paper, and the human mind. So it's the only thing I know, and I continue everything I said in Bones. I continue as an example. And also, I couldn't be a kosher teacher if I wasn't also writing.
Right, of course.
Yeah.
We are almost one-third of the way to our goal of $1,500 for this hour, so let's keep the phones ringing, 428-1393, 428-1393. If you like Natalie Goldberg, and if you like the Santa Fe Radio Cafe and KSFR, all of these, Natalie and I and all the many other guests on this program and KSFR and Mary Lynn LeBlanc are all working hard to bring you quality, high-quality radio every single day of the year. It's a lot of work. It takes a lot of resources, and we just come to you a few times a year. So we hope that and ask that you can pitch in, 428-1393. I was thinking, as I was preparing to talk to you, about the different goals of being a good writer and being a good person. As we know from just looking at the 20th century and and back forever. There are so many writers and artists. I mean, Picasso would be one of many examples, who are horrible human beings and truly great artists who are channeling the sensibility of their times.
Yes. I think that was my goal. I saw writers who were fantastic writers and miserable human beings. I saw that gap. And what I wanted was the knowledge and understanding I have through writing to carry it out in the bones and cells and moments of my life. I wanted to close that gap. And that's why I call writing a practice, something that you do regularly. And that was my main goal. And the difference between, I think I brought the Eastern mind into our Western idea of writing.
When you look at your students, how have you seen their work evolve? Do you have a lot of students who go on to become published writers? Are they using it more in an inner way?
They're using it every way. Some of them, yes, have become published. Some have won prizes. But, for instance, I just got a long letter from an old student who studies with me every year for 10 years now. I think she has a government job. And she actually uses it at work. She said whenever she has to address one of the people who work for her and she's angry, she sits and does writing practice for 10 minutes, gets it out, gets clear what she needs to say, and then communicates. Then sometimes she'll have...
And we hope she throws away the piece of paper
or shreds it. Well, you know what? She just wrote me and said she's now getting her employees to do writing practice. You know, at a meeting, it cuts through so much quicker, and the meeting isn't as boring. You know, they're on edge, and they, you know, finally get to say something. And then out of that, they're more connected to their own mind. So then when they articulate, she said things move much faster because they're saying something much closer to the truth. So that's been very exciting for me because I want it to feed every aspect of life. Not just become a great writer for writing a book, which is wonderful if you have that.
428-1393 is the number. It's interesting. You and I were talking just before we went on the show about how much the writing industry or the publication world has changed. And we were talking to David Morrell about that last week. And it's crazy. Is that something that you talk about with your students, how to keep up?
Well, I don't talk that much about publishing. I tell people you do at least 2 years of writing practice before you even think of doing anything with that writing because I want to build a strong spine. But, yes, I do deal with the publishing world because I publish. I make my living as a writer. And it's falling apart. People say it's going through a transition. But I think they have to get a lot more courageous and have more vision of possibilities because e-books are coming out now. People are doing a lot of blogging. A lot of the writing and reading is happening on computers. And I think the publishing world has to move with that and get alive to it, even though I still love books. They're scared, and all they want to publish now are books that they think could be bestsellers.
Right.
And they have to be willing, again, to take chances, to crack open their old structure.
Yeah. It, in a way, there's kind of an analogy to what happened in radio, which is that you had, I mean, when I was growing up, there was, you know, top 40 AM radio, and then there were these kind of... album stations that played, you know, the entire Pink Floyd album and things like that, and played alternative rock and so on. And they were then taking a risk, and then it all kind of got canned and consolidated, and you had this Clear Channel era, which then is kind of in its, I mean, is more than kind of, it's in a tremendous decline precisely because of its unwillingness to take risks and really serve a thinking public.
Yes, exactly. And I think that's what, you can't be frozen and comfortable in the old way. Plus, so many people have been fired. There's no money. They've lost a fortune. I think Simon & Schuster, don't quote me on the exact percentage, but I think they were almost 40% down last year. That's a lot to carry a big company.
That's a lot.
So they're very scared, and, you know, the economy has affected them incredibly.
And a lot of the best editors are not there anymore. They have been, the people who really had that tremendous sensitivity to writing have been foisted off, and,
yes,
and there's, you know, very nice recent college graduates trying to do that work.
Yes, because the old editors cost more money.
Exactly.
They were really experienced. Some of those editors are becoming editors, you know, for individuals. You can hire them. But, yeah, you can't get romantic about the publishing world.
Right.
I never have been, actually. It's a business, and I never lose that sight.
We're talking to Natalie Goldberg, our number here at the Santa Fe, not at the Santa Fe Baking Company, at Santa Fe Public Radio, KSFR. Our pledge drive number is 428-1393. Now we are at almost $900. We are getting very close to our goal of $1,500, and delighted. We've got a bunch of contributors to thank right now, so let's let Mary Lynn thank them.
Sure. First of all, I want to mention Cynthia Botke. It's Cynthia Huss Botke that I mispronounced last time.
Okay.
And Jennifer Johnson adopted Arlise Ripple. Marilyn Mason contributed.
Thank you.
Pete Asher. Caro Cristiano, and her Watt is Watusi. Jeffrey Haas and Marielle
Manasi.
Yeah, Manasi.
Yes.
They adopted a Watt named There to Struggle.
Excellent.
Jennifer Hollingsworth adopted Ursula Hari. And they're on the phones again.
Excellent. 428-1393. I just love it when the phone rings, and I feel that it's a vote of confidence for the Radio Cafe and for the station when you call. So, and above all, for Natalie Goldberg, for our guest who's here at this moment. 428-1393 is the number. Let's get our $1,500 goal. Let's get it soon, and maybe we can make it up to, as we did yesterday, we set our goal at $1,500. We made $2,000. Maybe we can do that again today. 428-1393. Natalie, you do a lot of different kinds of things. You do a year-long...
Intensive, yeah.
What's that
I do that every other year. I do it up at the Mabel Dodge Lujan House. And you sign up for a year to work with me, and we meet a week every season. And in between, you do a practice. You pick a practice, and they're interesting practices. One student did a haiku a day, and actually it was at a time when her son was in Iraq, fighting in Iraq. This was years ago, and it was very frightening for her, and she was very upset, but every day she had to completely let go to find a haiku, and it was very healing, and she's become quite a good haiku writer. Someone else decided to write a letter 5 days a week. And some people, you know, decided to sit a half hour a day. And we read at least 4 or 5 books in between our meetings and do a lot of practice. There's something that really builds because you know you're going to come back with this, and it's the same group.
Right.
And it's all over the country. And I only take about 23 students. So, and I do it every other year, and it gets pretty intimate.
And those people really get to know each other and each
yes.
other's writing and practice very
yes.
well.
And they get to know literature pretty well. But we read wide ranges. We read African literature. We read John Lewis's book, Walking in the Wind, about the civil rights movement. We read Dylan's memoir, you know, a wide range and definitely
Dylan?
Yeah, but don't you need...
Bob Dylan?
Yeah. His Chronicles,
uh-huh.
It's quite wonderful. It's a record of his growth, his creative growth as a musician. Oh, it was on the bestseller list a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
It's fabulously written.
There's a new book about Bob Dylan.
Yes, there is.
By yep. Sean Willens.
Yeah, and it's he's a Princeton historian.
Yeah.
And it's got mixed reviews, but... You know, I did a film on Bob Dylan called...
That's right. It was in the Santa Fe Film Festival. We
yeah,
talked
yeah,
about that a few
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And we interviewed Sean Willens in the movie
right.
years ago. So we're excited to see that he has a book out now.
We're talking to Natalie Goldberg. Now, you are also an artist. You're a painter.
Yes, I'm a painter, and I show at the Ernesto Mayans Gallery on Canyon Road. I've been painting for as long as I've been writing and
meditating.
Yeah.
Is it, what would you say is primary for you? What role does painting have in your art, in your creative life?
It's my darling pleasure. There's no angst around it. If I want to paint, I paint. If I don't, I don't. And usually when I'm painting, I'm singing. And a very happy part of me comes out.
Very interesting. I had a friend once who was a music teacher and a musician. And his father was a music teacher and a musician. And when he was a very small kid, his father started him on an instrument and was really a taskmaster. And then a few years later, he had to add another instrument, and then he had to add another instrument. So he played all these instruments. And then his father said to him at a certain point in his childhood, "You can choose any one instrument and just play it however you want. I'm not going to teach you or judge you or anything. You just go wild." And he chose the piano. And he was so free on the piano, but he could take everything that he'd learned from his taskmaster training
exactly.
in the other instruments and use
exactly.
it on the piano.
Yeah. Well, painting actually informs my writing life in a very free and open way. I have to pay attention to color, to detail. And it's also the silence of paint. And in that silence, I work out things, conundrums with my writing.
Oh, very interesting, because you get to think freely without actually focusing on the writing.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Lord knows, for so many of us, we get our best ideas walking or in the shower.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I use it.
428-1393 is the number here at KSFR on the pledge drive. We are hoping that we are getting very quickly to our $1,500 goal, 428-1393. We're talking to Natalie Goldberg. So you are a painter and a writer and a filmmaker. What would you say are your challenges right now? Do you have anything new that you're grappling with?
Well, I don't know if it's a challenge. I adore the farmer's market. And this summer, when the farmer's market is happening, I rarely shop in a regular store. And so I buy a lot of food at the farmer's market, and then I take it home, and I have to do something with it. And I don't like wasting things, even though I have a compost. So my challenge is to use that food and to eat healthily. And that's a challenge, because I also adore chocolate and could easily step away at the Santa Fe Baking Company and get a chocolate croissant.
And that would not be the very worst thing that ever happened.
No, it definitely wouldn't.
428-1393. We are almost at $1,000, ladies and gentlemen. Step up, give a call. We can get that extra $500 or more by the end of the hour, 428-1393.
Come on, if you love Nabokov, if you've loved poetry, just donate something. This is our very own radio station.
And Liesl Dennis did. She loves story shards.
Uh-huh.
Yay.
And we had a first-time donor, too, Amy, who adopted, I suppose in honor of you, Natalie Watt.
Nice.
Oh, thank you.
There, talk about energy. There is now physical energy named after Natalie Goldberg.
I don't have to get up in the morning. Something else is doing it for me.
Right. 428-1393. We are talking to Natalie Goldberg. I just had a brilliant question I was going to ask you. I've completely forgotten it. Oh, yeah. Well, this isn't a brilliant question, but your year-long intensive meets once per season, and I noticed you didn't say once every 3 months. Are the changing of the seasons and those cycles part of the practice?
Well, partially, you know, it's national and actually international. Sometimes people fly in from other countries, and I want them to see Taos in each season, so they get the opportunity to see it in each season. And for instance, in the summer, we all go swimming in the Rio Grande. So it's quite wonderful.
428-1393. All phones are ringing. We love it when all phones ring. What role? I have to ask this just because I'm so focused on dogs and on animals. But what role do animals play in your life and in your practice, if any?
Well, that's funny because I don't have any pets. I travel too much, and I wasn't really brought up with pets. And you know, I was brought up with my grandparents, who dogs were used in the pogroms and in the Nazi camps. So I was brought up with a fear for dogs. But I love writing about animals. I like animals free. I love hiking and seeing animals. I love birds. I love deer. You know, I love elk. You know, I love horses. I have lots of horse cards, like a little girl. But
horse cards?
Yeah, you know, cards, greeting cards. I buy greeting cards.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like baseball cards.
No. I would buy those too. Sometimes I have horse calendars. So it's sort of, they're not real in the flesh manifested, I have to admit. And actually, I heard that Bones was taught at IAIA, and at the end of the class, Ann Fillmyer, who was teaching the class, said the students decided she doesn't know anything about dogs. And I thought, these are really perceptive students.
That's so funny. Was it the absence of dogs in the book?
I think they knew dogs so well, the kids who were in that class, that they just, you can pick these things up.
But, I mean, do you mention dogs in the book?
I don't think I do. I don't think they do. I do, but I probably throw in everything else. Somehow, what we don't mention also tells you a lot about an author.
Right.
So, actually, now I start throwing in dogs into things. Because my students always write about dogs.
There was a book that came out right around the time that I started doing this show. It was about 7 years ago, and it was called Dog is My Co-Pilot, and it was a compilation of writing stories and essays that were pulled from a magazine called Bark, which is a dog magazine for people. It sort of, I think it billed itself, I don't know if it's still around, it may still be, but kind of as the New Yorker of pet magazines, so it was for literate people and kind of upmarket publication for dog lovers. And I read a lot of these essays, and one thing that I found reading them is that it is remarkably difficult to write a good story about a dog where the dog is the main character and where it's not a human being. And I thought
about
that a lot.
And not get sentimental. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I bet. That is really hard. So the main characters were all dogs?
Well, in some of them, the main characters were humans, and there was a dog there. But what I realized was, because I, of course, always have dogs, and I love them, and they're just the cutest things, and they're, you know, I learn from them. But the thing about dogs, in contrast to humans, is that they never really change very much.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, of course. I love that you said that. You know, I just remembered, I was asked to do a benefit, believe it or not, for an animal shelter. And I said, well, you know, I don't have much connection with animals. And people looked at my paintings. You know, I have Living Color that has 60 of my paintings in it. They said, there's animals all over your paintings. And I hadn't realized it. So I did the benefit. We copied the paintings, and I signed them if they donated money.
Nice.
So I do have animals. They're just in my paintings, not in my writing.
Right, right. Natalie Goldberg is with us. 428-1393 is the pledge drive number, and I suspect we're going to be getting a report from the control room very soon because the phones have been ringing. And I just love it when people step up and when people actually contribute to the station. I mean, you know, we do our work, and I suppose there's an analogy to being a writer. You do your work, you do your work, you do your work. You get maybe a little bit of feedback, or maybe you don't get any feedback, and then the moment comes where, in your case, you publish a book, or in our case, we do the pledge drive, and then all of a sudden you see what your listeners or your readers really think.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Are you out there?
Yeah.
Do you care? Please. I worked really hard.
Exactly.
Yeah. And actually, just sitting here, I realize I've interviewed with you several times over the years. You're always pumping this out. Do you know what I mean? While I'm traveling, while I'm here, I'm not here, I'm writing books. You are here working.
Yeah.
You're sustaining this radio station, and we should sustain you.
Well,
now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
428-1393. Yeah, I was thinking about that. Many people, I think probably most work, if you think about us as descended from agricultural people and going through the cycle of the seasons and so on, you go through... you do projects, and so your project is planting and then watering and then harvesting and so on, and these things have real cycles. And it's funny, during this show there's no downtime. You do it every single day. You do it 5 days a week, all year. You do a few pre-records so you can take some time off. But there's not that that cyclical sense of you work hard and then you get to rest.
Yes, yeah. No, I'm feeling that right now as we're talking because I have to be present with you, but I'm only on for a half hour.
Right.
You keep going.
Luckily, it's tremendous fun.
I can tell that.
We are over $1,000. We are at $1,100.
Oh.
We only need $400 more to reach our goal of $1,500 this hour.
428-1393. 428-1393. Yes, and Elena Zachary named a watt in honor of Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones. It's What's Next?
Very nice.
And Dr. Mae King also contributed.
And Elena Zachary is going to be on the show tomorrow. She's a wonderful actor with a tremendously accomplished background, which we are going to be hearing about probably in some detail tomorrow morning. 428-1393, 428-1393. Now, you're a New Yorker.
Yes.
How does New York figure into your consciousness and in your writing and your practice?
I ran from New York when I was 18, and I'm only now at 62 wanting to be drawn back there. But I'm sure I have this heavy accent. It identifies me. I'm pushy. I'm impatient. And I don't mean those as negative qualities of New Yorkers. Sometimes I think that's healthy. But it's hard for me to drive slowly, you know, and stay the speed limit. How else? I don't know. I think my friends could tell you more. You know, I like to eat fatty foods.
Right. And,
you know, these are the days of awe right now between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I always feel that. And I don't have to be from New York to feel that, you know, as a Jew.
What do you mean by days of awe?
It's the new year. Rosh Hashanah begins the new year. And for 7 days, you really take in and contemplate your life and know that at Yom Kippur, the book of life will be closed for that year and will mark you. And so these are really days of deep contemplation and really taking in the love of life.
Is that something that you do? Is that something, I mean, it's a religious tradition, it's Judaism, but that's part of your practice, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I very much honor being a Jew and love being a Jew and never felt a polarity that I couldn't be a Zen person too. I felt that they fed each other. Now, it's interesting you asked me about New York and I came in and talked about being a Jew. I think, you know, for the holidays in the public schools in New York, they close the schools. So everybody's a little Jewish in New York. We all eat a little corned beef and pastrami.
Yes, it is so very true. We are up to $1,300. Yay. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. And the phone is not ringing right now, but I can bet you that it will in just a moment, 428-1393, because we want to honor Natalie Goldberg. There's a lot of Jews who have become Buddhists.
Yes.
What do you think is going on there?
I think Jews are smart. It's because they're smart. They see the innate intelligence in the practice of Buddhism. So I think that, and it's grounded. Buddhism is a grounded practice where you see things as they are. And I think that's very aligned to Judaism.
Does Judaism have that kind of practice embedded within it?
Well, not meditation or not silence, certainly, but good common sense and not just believing things. That's why things keep changing in Judaism. They're not frozen.
What are some things that have changed? You mean the movement from Orthodox to Reform,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, and people are always breaking off and creating a new angle to Judaism. And, you know, in Santa Fe, there's many congregations you can go to for the High Holy Days because there's many different angles on it. You know, there's a lesbian rabbi in one, and, you know, a big building with another, and, you know, lots of singing and dancing in another. One will just have Yom Kippur Kol Nidre at home. So there's, it's very wide what you can do.
I didn't know until we did an interview sometime in the not too distant past that, I mean, the bar mitzvah has been going on forever, but the bat mitzvah for girls is a relatively new invention.
Yes, yeah, it is. And really having women rabbis is a new invention. You know, gay people and gay congregations is a new invention. That goes back to what I was talking about. There's a structure, which is wonderful, and you can build off that structure, but you have to keep breaking it and making it new and cracking it open to let the light in.
Right.
As Leonard Cohen says in his song.
Leonard Cohen, a
good
great
Jew.
Yeah, good Jew and a voice of a generation.
Yes, exactly. Bob Dylan, a good Jew and a voice of a generation.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't Bob Dylan convert to Christianity?
That was just a phase because he wasn't frozen. You know, he doesn't freeze himself and think he has to be a certain way.
Right.
You know, but certainly he's Jewish too. I never doubted that. And it certainly, it was a phase. He's come back. I think, I bet you anything on Yom Kippur, he'll be in the temple.
428-1393. We've got 8 minutes left. I've got a report from the control room that the telephones are not ringing. And so we're just going to give you a little break right now. And I am going to say the phone number, and I'm going to talk for just about a minute or two about KSFR and give you a moment so that you don't lose a single word of what the wonderful Natalie Goldberg is saying. Actually, we also have another guest who is going to be with us in just a moment. So we're going to take a little break, 428-1393. 428-1393 is the number. And let's hear a spot from our underwriters. And I'd like to welcome to the show Sky Gray and Kevin Muller from the Santa Fe Mountain Center. Welcome.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here.
Good and morning. We're just going to give you a few minutes. We've only got 5 minutes left in the show, but you have a great anniversary celebration coming up.
Yes, we're celebrating our 30th anniversary, and our event is going to be September 19th, which is this Sunday, from 1 to 4 at the Santa Fe Mountain Center, which is in Tasuque, right next door to Shidoni. The parking is going to be at Tasuque Elementary and Shidoni Foundry. So come on out. It's going to be an amazing event. We're going to have young people sharing their stories and testimonies of their experience with the Mountain Center. We're going to be honoring Regis Pecos, who's the speaker, chief of the staff for the Speaker of the House. And we're going to have some dancers and singers and drummers from Zuni. So it's going to be a great day. We're going to have our events open. It's a community event. Young people can come out, kids, climbing our climbing tower, our high ropes course, and just having a really fun day.
Now, we've had you on the air before, but tell us briefly, what does the Santa Fe Mountain Center do?
We're an experiential education, adventure-based organization that, again, has been around for 30 years, and we work with vulnerable young people and adults, providing life-changing and transforming experiences to help young people and adults alike basically transcend some of the issues that are affecting their lives.
And so you've got kids who are basically in pretty rough shape. I love that you had the Israeli and Palestinian girls
yes.
there who then had to do these high ropes things and trust each other and
exactly.
stuff like that. But we have, you know, some, not the same, but equally dire problems here in New Mexico with people being in great physical danger and in kind of emotional stress and substance addictions and parents with substance addictions and all
yes.
those kinds of things.
Absolutely.
And you get these kids working with each other on the basis of trust and responsibility.
Yeah, and with that, I'd like to introduce Kevin Muller, who's one of our program managers and risk manager at the Mountain Center, to actually take exactly what you're talking about, Mary Charlotte, and break it down into a story.
Sure. So last Sunday, we were working with a group of kids out of the Youth Diagnostic and Development Center, which is a detention center for young people down in Albuquerque. And we were at the end of a rock climbing sequence. So we took them up to White Rock, and we were climbing at an area called Gallows Edge with a group of these young men. And the way we prepped the day was we asked them to sort of think back over the last couple of months about anything that might have shifted or changed in their lives, and to think about that as we were climbing for the day. And at the end of the day, when we circled up, two or three of these young men talked about, and this is sort of unprompted, talked about the fact that that being on our program, they had been able to sort of think outside of their normal activities, think of other options they had in their lives other than, you know, getting in trouble, bad behavior, that kind of thing. And that's the sort of thing that we hope to have all our clients come to in the end.
It's, I think there's something about being outdoors and being in that physical space and having your body be at risk and being in a group like that, which is so primal.
Mm-hmm. It is. And one of the most important things that we stress with our clients is to help them create and maintain a safe emotional space, which is something a lot of these young people are not used to doing at all. And having them be in that space over time, realize they're safe, realize they have the opportunity to really kind of like consider their lives and then talk about it openly with other people without any without feeling threatened, is a really, really powerful experience. That's sort of at the core of everything that we do.
How long does it take to get to that point where they come in a school group or whatever? I mean, is this a matter of minutes, hours, days, months?
I think the longer we get contact time with clients, the more effective we are. So with this group, for example, these kids out of the detention facility, we'd been with them for 5 full days. And you definitely hear a lot more on day 5 than you do on day 1. On day 1, we're still sort of feeling each other out, trying to figure out what's safe, what isn't safe, how to be around one another. And our job as facilitators is to really help create that space, redirect behaviors so that clients sort of learn how to interact safely with one another.
Skye, this is the 30th anniversary of the Santa Fe Mountain Center.
Yes.
And you must have the ability to follow how kids have come out. Have you seen people turn their lives around?
Absolutely. And we're going to actually have young people sharing some of their stories on Sunday about how their lives have changed.
Before one more thing, Natalie Goldberg has to go. I just want to say thank you so much for being with us.
It was a great pleasure, and I love hearing what these next people are talking about. It's important work.
Natalie,
thanks
for being with us. Thanks for your participation.
Keep donating money.
428-1393. I think we're about $25 away from our goal, so let's get that done.
Yay. Okay, so I think the other thing that we do, it's nice to see you, Natalie. The other thing that we do is do evaluation, and we do pre and post test, and we do a lot of analysis to make sure that our methodologies and the application of our programming is actually effective. So that's the other way that we follow and make sure that we're on target in terms of making sure that the way that we provide services is actually effective and meaningful.
Skye Gray and Kevin Muller are from the Santa Fe Mountain Center.
Yeah, the other thing I just want to say is it's really important for the community to continue to support KSFR, and I really hope that as you do your fund drive that I know that you're working on this week, that if you're $25 away, somebody call in and make a donation. The Mountain Center is going to definitely make a donation, and we appreciate everything that you bring to the community and the relevancy of interviewing Natalie Goldberg and the Mountain Center. So thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Well, thank you, and it's just about time to go. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. I want to thank all the people who are involved in KSFR, the staff, the board, the volunteers, and our many listeners. Thank you for supporting the Radio Cafe and supporting KSFR. And it's just about time to go, but Mary Lynn, is there a little report?
Oh, my God. Yes, there is. What Fluffer Buns Theosophy? Lori Liverman?
Yes. that's a good name for a what.
And Frida Diamond adopted What's Up, Pussycat. Justina Trott adopted What Way, Mary Charlotte.
Oh,
and
goodness.
Pam Campbell called in. And Jason Roberts adopted Got What.
Well, oh, no.
And Margot Chavez adopt Risa.
All right.
And we've got the BBC coming up.
Hasta la vista. Thank you, everybody. Ciao.